Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi there, welcome to Wednesday, September 3rd version of Wall Street Unspun. I'm Haman Katharia, the manager of the Los Angeles branch, and Peter Schiff's unavailable today, so I'll be speaking on his behalf. Peter basically is attending a client meeting in Minnesota and speaking to clients about what's going on in the markets with gold, with the dollar, with commodities. And actually yesterday he was there for a rally with Ron Paul. As many of you may know, our firm, Peter specifically, we are the economic advisors to Ron Paul's campaign. Now, some of you may ask, what does that mean? Basically, Ron Paul believes and stands for a lot of the same things that we do. Limited government, living within your means, sound money. He strongly believes in having a metallic backing to your currency, some kind of controls on the government's ability to debase the currency. Now, as you've seen, the U.S. dollar has been falling over the years against hard assets, and the situation that we find ourselves in, literally, is that gold, silver, oil, uranium, a host of commodities have been rising. Now, these commodities have been pulling back a little bit recently, and it's a situation where I want to discuss gold in particular. Now, one of the things that we do with Ron Paul is we get to meet him on occasions. Now, I was fortunate enough to meet Dr. Paul, this is about 7 weeks ago, in San Diego. And it was a gathering with about 50 tables. I was lucky I got a seat right next to Dr. Paul. So we were discussing the Washington agreement. Now, the Washington Agreement limits central bank selling of gold to 500 tons a year. Now, what Dr. Paul said, it rings true. He says, despite all this intervention, despite all the different gimmicks, the working group on financial markets, the plunge protection team, if you will, that gold continues higher. Now, this today is something that we really have to remember. Now, as you've seen, gold has fallen about 22%, and this has been an extended correction over a period of many, many weeks. Now, when we look back and we say, okay, well, gold's dropping. Why? This is actually normal market behavior. Now, the gold market is volatile, as you know. I prefer to say that it's not gold that's volatile. It's actually the U.S. dollar that's volatile, and gold is the constant. So you've seen this 23-week correction. Actually, it's 23-week correction, about 22% in the drop of gold. Very similar to what happened in the May 2006 high. You saw gold drop almost an identical percentage, and that correction took about 23 weeks. So why do I think this is relevant? Well, we are coming into seasonal strength. The period that is right before us is very important to remember. You've got the Indian wedding season. You've got the agricultural harvest coming in. And you got Diwali, which is coming in October 21 now. For those of you Indians out there, Diwali is the festival of lights. You already know that. You know that it's an auspicious time to buy a lot of gold. The wedding season, which lasts from November to December, also there's tremendous demand for gold. The agricultural harvest is the most interesting fact that a lot of people who are not from India, which is, by the way, where I was born, the farmers don't tend to want to show a lot of their income. Now, traditionally, what do you do in a country where inflation runs at very high levels? Well, you convert it into something real, something, now, whether it's property, you know, adding on farming acreage or various things like that. That's one way to do it. But the easiest way to do it is to convert your income from agricultural harvest to gold. And that's what's happening. Now, the Indians have been largely out of the market. The jewelry shops, the various places where you can buy physical bars have been largely destocked earlier this year. They had stopped buying when gold took out the $1,000 level. Now, recently, there's been a huge, tremendous pickup in demand over the last 5 weeks. Now, this demand, actually, is running 5 to 10 times the average of 2007 levels. Now, the thing to also keep in mind that this is not confined only to India. This strong demand, actually, can be documented by going to Abu Dhabi, by actually looking at places as diverse as the Istanbul Gold Exchange. I mean, you see Turkey gold imports this year up 70%, 47 tons. This is the highest monthly figure ever recorded. So you're seeing it all throughout the Middle East. You're seeing it in Shanghai. You're seeing it in Mumbai. So gold is being supported by physical buying. So you might ask, why is gold dropping? Well, if you look at the various data points, which we like to look to, there are a couple of big commercials. Now, what is a commercial? A commercial is defined as somebody who's in the business. Now, a company, a larger gold company, might want to hedge their production, and what they would do is they would sell forward in the futures market and lock in prices. But that has been distorted. Now what we seem to see more, which are the category loosely defined as commercials, are actually proxies for the Fed. J.P. Morgan, et cetera, they actually are very active in the commercial category shorting gold. Now, something that would probably be even more easy to delineate is what's happened recently in the silver market. This is something that I got from James Conrad at Seeking Alpha. You had, on July 1st, two U.S. banks short 6,199 contracts of COMEX silver. Now, what does that mean? That's about 31 million ounces of silver. Now, keep in mind that COMEX warehouse is only about 110, 120 million ounces. So, what happened? Well, from July 1 to August 5th, so a little bit over a month, these two banks took their short positions from 6,200 contracts to 34,000 contracts. Think about that. 169 million ounces short. So what do you think happened to the price of silver? Well, obviously it cratered. You saw a drop all the way down from 1955 basis of the September contract to a low of 1222. So although gold sold off, the drop in silver was even more sharp. So one thing that we saw that was very, very different in this recent drop was the level of physical buying. Now, you just heard me talk about the physical buying in Abu Dhabi, in Turkey, Mumbai, Shanghai. The funny thing is, I look at other anecdotal data points when I look at physical prices here in the U.S. Silver dropped to as low as 1222. Now, if you had done a search of your local coin shop, you've done a search on eBay and tried to buy 100-ounce bars of silver, guess what? You couldn't find them for less than $16.50 an ounce. This is what has changed. The average person, the average man on the street, they have an understanding. They understand that the numbers coming out of the Federal Reserve, the numbers coming out of central banks around the world, don't really correspond to what's actually happening to them in their everyday lives. Prices are rising. Prices are going up dramatically. There's food riots. You can't even fill your tank of gas. People are having to make choices. The amount of credit card purchases for gasoline is soaring. So these people understand that. The average person on the street has a greater appreciation. And that's how you get a variance between the futures price and the physical price. This time, the physical market has actually come in and supported the futures price. You've got this. I don't want to use manipulation. Peter is not one to give credence to these conspiracy theorists. And I understand that. The reason that we don't want to spend too much time on that is because, let's face it, if they want to take the price and knock it down artificially, all it does is give us a buying opportunity. So I've been getting a lot of calls from concerned clients recently. They are fearful. And that is a very unscientific way for me to determine, are we close to a bottom? Now, I'm never going to say a bottom is around the corner. I can point to 35 years of history, and because of the factors that I've just spoken about, gold and silver tend to bottom around this August-September time frame. Now, we've got a couple of callers on hold here. Let me go ahead and take Larry from Michigan. Larry, you there?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. How are you today?
I'm fine, but I was wondering, you know, when I look at the way during this rapid credit expansion where we've had credit expanding at five times the rate of GDP, and over that time span we saw home prices in the U.S. skyrocket, we saw gold and oil and foreign stocks all participated in that credit expansion and massive speculation with the hedge funds, which are also highly leveraged and heavily into those trades.
Correct.
Is it not almost to be expected that we now see precious metals and energy crashing just the same way that we're seeing the housing crash, which is not only in the United States, but it's in Europe, and aren't we really witnessing a global credit contraction, which is forcing all asset prices down?
Well, you voice a very common argument, which is a deflationary argument. I would actually fall in the camp, and I believe Peter would basically echo this sentiment, of somebody like John Williams. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to the website Shadow Stats. John Williams basically keeps a very good set of data points, which shows that we are actually in a situation where we do have deflation similar to what happened in the 70s, where you saw the prices of cassette recorders and TV sets and different kind of consumer items continuously fall. Yet the prices of basic goods, the things that consumers need from day to day, can continuously rise. Now, we are in a credit contraction. There is a lack of capital available, not only in the U.S., but this is something that has happened in other countries as well. You mentioned the U.K. I would probably add Spain to that. You've got situations where something which would be a viable entity, which can show solid financials and a proven ability to generate a return on capital, is still finding trouble getting funding. And this is part of the market at work. Now, you mentioned real estate. You saw the boom, which coincided with the expansion of money and credit, which was engineered initially by Alan Greenspan, that entire 200-plus year history of this country. We had a money supply which from 1995 to 2006 was literally doubled by Alan Greenspan. So that filtered into real estate prices. I mean, you saw the...
And didn't it also filter into the price of gold? Didn't gold basically go up commensurately?
Gold is dirt cheap. It did not go up commensurately. If you look at... let's track this back. Let's go back even further. Let's go back to 1900. 1900 to 1995... You can chart CPI growth. You can chart real estate prices growth. Guess what? It's almost the same chart. Prices moved up at the same rate. Now, you look at gold, and you look at gold was where in 1980, and you take the same CPI measure and apply that from 1980 to now, and you see that gold would have to be at 2,300. Now, if gold had reached 2,300 and then had launched on a large correction from there, we might be having a very different conversation. We're actually at a point in this commodity super cycle of which this is what I would call an intermediate term correction. Now, let me look back to 1974. We had initially a big drop in the price of gold. It took a while for that to recover. We had another really big drop in 1976. Okay, here are the exact figures. December 1974 to August 76, gold dropped 48%. Now, the argument back then was that, the man on the street could see that the prices of what they needed, like the oil, the food stuff, was still rising. And the economy was in what you would call a deflation because conditions were worsening. There was a credit contraction going on. It was hard to make a good living, and gold did drop. And so the argument was very similar to what you're making now. But guess what? By the end of 1976, gold had increased 32%. 1978, it fell 20% again. Subsequently, we rose 700%. We went to the 1980 highs at $850 an ounce. The reason I'm bringing all these past episodes up is that history is very, very relevant here. The gold market now is responding very similar to what happened in previous episodes. The difference is now we're truly in an era of fiat money. There is more money circulated out there. The money supply is much greater. So I don't think that $2,300 level, which would be the inflation-adjusted high if you use CPI, is even relevant anymore. I think the eventual high, 8, 10, 12 years from now, when we see your typical housewife on the street talking to her friend, what gold stock do you own? That'll be the conversation at the grocery store, at the checkout counter. When you see those kind of things, yes, maybe we're going to have a top in gold. But we're nowhere close to that. This is a normal intermediate term correction, which is what we've seen in the past.
When I listen to talk radio at late at night, all these shows about UFOs and everything, every 15 minutes they have an advertisement for gold. And on television now there's a show about how you can pan for gold.
Correct. The second parcel of the fear and greed psychology of the market. Maybe if this correction goes on for a few months, those shows won't be there anymore. These Johnny-come-latelys who have just gotten interested in gold at this time are not the type of people that the market, I can even call it Mr. Market, allows to stay for the duration. The people who have been buying gold for the last 5, 6, 7 years, they've seen these drops. Okay, we dropped 20% from the May 2006 high, 22% to be exact. We just repeated that. Now, does that mean that anything is changing? Are the problems that we face as a nation becoming less so? Are the situations that we face as far as the challenges with Social Security and Medicare and all the unfunded liabilities and the other issues that are prevalent right now, are they getting any better? No, the fact is that they're getting worse. So I would argue that this is a normal cycle correction. We're going to see larger moves, so get used to it. I mean, it's a thing where you got to look at gold for what it is. It's been money for 5,000 years. It was money before you and I were here. It'll be money for long after we're gone. And it's prudent to keep a portion, not so much that you're losing sleep over, because that's not what gold is for. Gold is basically that insurance policy that everybody should have, and it shouldn't be for sale. So that's what's good about what I'm seeing here in this action, this recent price action, with the physical market actually supporting the paper market. We're coming up on our first break, so I'm going to have to let you go, but it was really good talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Take care.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
Welcome back to the show. We had a pretty lively conversation there regarding gold in the first segment of our show. I do have some callers stacking up here, so I want to go ahead and take Jerry from Jersey.
Hello.
Hi, Jerry, you there?
Yes, I am. Okay, I just you broke up for a second, so I wasn't sure if I got through. I have a question. I have invested a portion of my portfolio with Euro-Pacific, and I fully believe that the dollar will collapse eventually, if not go down significantly. As of recent times, the dollar keeps increasing. I think it's due to market manipulation, and my portfolio is getting slower and lower and lower, and I'm curious, how long can they do this for?
Well, see, central bank intervention, the couple of trillion dollars which has come in to support the U.S. currency. I think Chuck Butler had written a nice piece on this. I was evaluating some data the other day, and he was talking about what actually drove the rise in the dollar. Now, I was looking at some charts. I tend to do this a little bit on the weekend especially, and we are at the 100-week moving average on the U.S. dollar index. The 200-week moving average is still relatively at higher levels. I think the index would actually have to get to 83 to challenge that. Now, my feeling is when you break a 27-year support level, think about this. The dollar bounced off the 80 level three full times. Now, this support level eventually gave way, and we had a waterfall decline all the way from 80 to about 71 and change. And what we've witnessed now is a lot of hedge funds, a lot of leveraged speculators get short the dollar. The primary recipients for this short dollar trade was the commodity currencies. So this is a function of the market. Now, the market is all about fear and greed. What they are doing... Now, when I say they, I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist, but, I mean, there's documented numbers out there. You can see that there's been a lot of buying of our mortgage backs and of our treasuries, the raising of the bank minimums in China. That actually forced various banks in China to hold more U.S. dollars. So, I mean, there's different data points that we look at, and we're not very surprised by this. So if you're an account holder with us, especially if it's only been in the last year or so, the 15% rally that you've seen in some of these currencies, I mean, literally, you'll see the Australian dollar was over 98, it came down to 83. We went from a 52-week high to a 52-week low in 5-6 weeks. And that's got to be painful when you're holding stocks within Australia. So that, unfortunately, has happened in some of the other commodity currencies, too. The New Zealand dollar has come down. Now, I'd like to point out what Peter says to clients and what the brokers here in my office say to clients before we will open an account. We basically say, look, this is your insurance policy. You're getting out of the dollar. The way we're doing it is not by getting long futures contracts. The way we do it is not by buying things on margin. It's not by using options. The way we do it is by buying companies. Now, in this market where you've seen the Shanghai market down 55% and the Mumbai market down 45%, there's various markets around the globe that have actually even done work, Pakistan, Vietnam. So they're down pretty sharply. You look at the developed markets like the European markets and even Australia. I mean, Australia's taken it on the chin where it doesn't invalidate what Peter says. We buy stocks at 6, 7, 8 times earnings that have 5, 6, 7, 8, 10% dividend yields. And yes, a stock can go from a PE of 6 to a PE of 4. Does that mean that the company itself is worth any less? I would point out to Warren Buffett's comments. I mean, I was watching him. This is about 3 months ago, and he was being interviewed on CNBC by, I believe it was Rebecca Quick, and she asked him about Wells Fargo. Now, I'm not saying that I would want to buy Wells Fargo, so don't get me wrong here. But I am going to point to a comment that he made. He said the economic value of Wells Fargo, in his opinion, had increased over the last 52 weeks. Now, I would probably argue against that just because there's other factors that, due to our focus and our research about what's going on with the U.S. dollar and the economy, and we would say that Wells Fargo is probably an accident waiting to happen, especially I have two guys in my office here who came from the mortgage industry. They know about all the home equity line of credit loans that Wells Fargo did. But anyway, that's getting off topic. The point I'm trying to make is the economic value of that entity. You got to look at it as a piece of an income-producing asset. Look at it like a piece of commercial real estate that you have. Are you more interested in what are cap rates doing in the local market? Which, of course, as a commercial real estate investor, you know that cap rates would dictate the value of the business, of the building itself. That is not your overriding concern. Your overriding concern is who the tenants are, is the income secure, have they been paying you on time, is that income going up over time? And that's where Peter spends a lot of time and effort finding these companies around the globe. He wants to make sure that as a whole, I'm not saying every single stock because there might be special situations where dividends are actually reduced, but as a whole, your portfolio yield will be rising over time. And if...
much fun.
Yeah, you know what? It's a situation this year where we've seen stocks down, you know, in their local currency slightly, and then you tack on a 10, 12, 15% currency drop, and yeah, you can easily be down larger percentages just mainly due to the currency itself. But the point we're making is you're out of the dollar, you're in income-producing entities that are spread around in different sectors around the globe, and that's the key to focus on. I'm sure it's a situation that the dollar will bounce around here. We're at that 100-week moving average. My feeling is we're going to turn lower. It will be repelled by that. I mean, I'm not I don't hold myself out to be a technician, but I am able to look at a chart. So I was reviewing that and this weekend, and it really looks like that's going to turn us back lower. Now, whether they will be able to hold this thing up through the elections, maybe. The situation when Bush came into office, let me take you back 8 years. The markets took off pretty much on the day after election. When I say markets, I'm talking about the gold market, the commodity market. The gold miners index, the HUI, was at a level of 35, and we're at basically 350 today. So what happened in those 8 years of the Bush administration, the gold index went up by tenfold. We still think the best is yet to come. So it might be that we have to actually be a little bit patient here and wait until after the elections, but it may be a lot sooner than that. The point is we're not market timers. We cannot predict when the other shoe will drop, whether it will be the nationalization of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac or some other event that triggers it. But I hope I've answered your question, and it's been good talking to you.
Oh, very good. Can I ask one more question, if I may?
Go ahead.
Okay. One investment that was recommended to me through Peter was Babcock & Brown Power.
Yes.
He's gotten killed.
We actually have some new research on that. I advise you to, let me see, we've got, most of the firm is gone right now because we're on the West Coast, but several of the brokers are in the Newport Beach office, or you can call directly into my branch here in Los Angeles. There are brokers who are taking calls, and we can give you the latest on that company.
Okay, I'm not sure if that's something I should hold or maybe just take my losses.
What you need to do is call in the 800 number. Somebody will be available to talk to you and actually advise you on that. And that...
any understanding as to why that has happened?
Sure, yes. They will be able to discuss that with you in detail.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call, and I think I've got Eric from North Carolina on hold.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing very good. You mentioned earlier about the major short positions that were taken by those two banks.
Yes.
I'm just trying to understand how is that going to work when they are going to have to cover those shorts? Is it similar to an oil-type situation where they get to roll those contracts over
next
month, or is there a time in the future where they're going to be forced to buy other than just a squeeze situation?
Take it back. Let's go back 28 years. Let's go back to the Hunt brothers. You've heard of the Hunt brothers, right?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, well, COMEX basically changed the rules on them. The Hunt brothers initially had a real solid understanding of the silver market, and what they did is they said, we're going to take an outsized position in silver. And originally they were doing that without leverage. And they expanded upon that, saying, we're going to take positions at COMEX, and we're going to take delivery. That worked for a while, but what happened is eventually they had huge profits, and they were levering up. And it was literally taking an outsized position in the market. Now, COMEX basically said, well, you guys are trying to manipulate the market, and we're going to make it illegal for any positions to be purchased unless they're covering short positions. So no more long positions. You could only close positions, and you can imagine what happened to silver. It got clobbered. Now, today, we've got various people out there, Ted Butler's one of them, that have alerted people through this campaign on the Internet, through various articles and things like that, and have said, look, the short position on COMEX silver is literally over triple the warehouse stocks. So what does that mean? Well, it's unprecedented. It has not happened in any other commodity, whether it's on the COMEX or whether it's on the London Metals Exchange. The amount of short positions that have to be covered at some point are unprecedented. Now, the ability for these commercial shorts to run the stops, you know, they know where the stop losses are. They know where all the black box technical trading systems are set to sell out if prices decline to a certain level. So guess what? They go there and they run the stops. There's been a miscalculation this time. I mean, you've got the physical market, which is kind of throwing a monkey wrench into this whole operation. Now, how is that going to resolve itself? I can't really tell you for sure. I can tell you a couple things that happened last year which might be able to give us an idea. Besides what COMEX did to the Hunt brothers, we had the London Metals Exchange. And I believe it was nickel that was going limit up every day. So what did they do? They basically said, we're going to allow you to settle your futures contracts in cash. So they changed the rules. The exchange can do that. They're almost like the IRS. They can do whatever they want to, whenever they want to. It's really something that is what we focus on. We say, look, you need to concentrate on physical holdings. Don't involve yourself in these games. Don't get on leverage. Be conservative. We are big buyers in several mining stocks. Or a portion of your portfolio. I mean, we have to basically say that silver and gold are speculative by nature, and the reason for that is because the lack of yield. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't own it. I personally have large holdings of gold and silver. I have larger holdings of gold and silver mining stocks. You could ask Peter directly, and he'd tell you that his personal portfolio has a lot of gold and silver mining stocks. The reason that we are very focused on the sector is because we think that there are critical problems in our economy. We think that the nation is in trouble. We think that there are serious issues to be addressed. And instead of postponing it, which is what the politicians who are asleep at the switch have been doing, we need to address these issues. Now, that's one of the reasons that our relationship with Ron Paul has worked out so well, because he totally gets it. He's one of the few guys in Congress who actually understands what we're looking at. And the situation, the public awareness that Ron Paul has created has been immense. The groundswell of support, which has literally paved the way for the real sound hard money candidate to come in. I mean, my feeling is that whoever wins this next election, whether it's Obama or McCain, is going to be a one-term president. And so maybe Ron Paul has paved the way for somebody to come in and sort of pick up the pieces. I mean, Peter's right. We're going to have a recession. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be we're going to have to take our lumps, put it that way. I mean, we basically have been living beyond our means for so long, and because of that, the eventual resolution to this is going to be quite painful. And
you're talking about the problems that are looming out there, and one word that I keep on hearing that is just an enormous situation sitting underneath the covers right now is the credit default swaps. And do you see something that's going to trigger some event, you know, sometime in the near future down the line that's going to kind of bring that word to the mainstream? And
I'm really glad you mentioned that. We saw something that was literally, I found it very interesting. The day, literally, that the federal government took their guarantee of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from an implicit guarantee to literally an explicit guarantee, you saw the credit default swaps on treasuries actually expand. The swaps on treasuries, which should be, they should cost you peanuts because of what are the odds of the treasury defaulting, right? Well, those swaps actually expanded when that happened. So that potential of $5 trillion additional liability on the books of Uncle Sam, on top of the already $75 trillion of unfunded liabilities between Social Security and Medicare, you saw credit default swaps expand. Now, right now, you are seeing a situation where corporate credit to go out and borrow money, the spread between the rate that corporations have to borrow at and the rate that the U.S. government borrows at, that is unprecedented. It's getting larger, and it's going to continue to get larger. So one of the things that we feel that will eventually happen, this is one of Peter's calls where he's been, let's just say he's been early, and I think ultimately he will be vindicated, is that the Treasury market, the U.S. Treasury market, is one of the largest bubbles that's yet to pop. I believe you don't even need to take Peter's work for it. You can talk to the guy who manages more Treasury bonds than anybody on the planet. That would be Bill Gross over at PIMCO. He basically has stated something very similar, that the conundrum, that famous word that Alan Greenspan used when he couldn't understand why rates were so low, that conundrum is alive and well right now. I don't think it's a conundrum. Personally, I have my own ideas about what's going on. You saw the Japanese stop buying our treasuries in 2005.
Yep. Well, it's interesting right now because this money has rushed out of commodities, but you see the stock market standing still, and it's obviously gone back into the treasury sector.
Well,
so,
no,
it's just
cycle.
That's driving these rates down lower, and, you know, it seems like only a matter of time before people are going to be buying these bonds at negative interest rates. I mean, it's just, it obviously can't last forever.
This is also a great point that you brought up, the real rate. What is the real rate on treasury bonds? If you look at...
negative.
I'm going to refer right back to John Williams' website. I mean, basically, the CPI, as defined by current numbers, is still quite... here, let me look at this figure here. What do I got here? This is some latest data points that I'm looking at. Okay. If we were to use second quarter CPI and adjust those GDP figures, you know, saw those GDP figures that came out recently where they say that we're at a 3.3 annualized growth rate. If you look embedded within those numbers, what do? Now, the GDP is supposed to be net of inflation. And the way they net that out is using something called a GDP deflator. Now, Alan Greenspan used to always call this his favorite method of looking at inflation. Now, they claim that the GDP deflator was at the lowest level in 10 years. Now, do you think there's anybody in this nation of ours who believes that inflation is running at the lowest rate in the last 10 years?
Just NBC.
There's not one client of mine that believes it. There's nobody that I talked to. I mean, this basic thing is literally the government trying to pull the wool over our eyes. They're basically saying that we're at a 3.3 growth rate because there's no inflation. So let's talk about that. What if they were to plug in, instead of this 1.2 annualized rate, the GDP deflator, what if they were to plug in the CPI? That would show that we don't have any GDP growth. If you were to plug in the numbers that John Williams has shown on shadow stats, it's actually much, much worse than that. You've got a situation where we have a contraction in progress in this country. The CPI, which was in force before President Clinton had a change in that era, that would show that our CPI right now is running around 9%. If you look at where we are on the current CPI, we're still running at far in excess of the Treasury rate. So, yes, we have a negative real rate on Treasury. So I have my own thinking on that. I believe that there has been a lot of intervention in the markets to try to keep bonds low. Whether this will be unwound after the elections or not is anybody's guess. I mean, I can't really say how long that a guiding hand can control things. It really doesn't matter. It does not matter. The problems can be put off. They can't be eliminated. So what we're looking at is a situation where the dollar is terminal. We are in trouble. And anyway, I'm going to have to take my second break here. It was really good talking to you, and you have a good day.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of our show. We've got wide open phone lines. I'm going to go ahead and give you the number. It's 1-888-678-9597. Once again, we've got wide open phone lines. I welcome your calls, your comments. What I want to do on this last segment is I want to talk a little bit about the big picture of what's going on in this country. Now, recently, there's been a movie which has come out. It's called IOUSA. Now, IOUSA is basically a big picture movie. It wants to put all these things that I've been talking about, that Peter has talked about, that Peter has mentioned to his clients, that he's written in Crash Proof, the number one selling book on Amazon.com's financial list for many, many weeks, the things that he's actually going to address in his new book, which is coming out, and we're getting close to that date, actually. It's coming out in October, so it's time is not too long to wait now. But anyway, getting back to IOUSA, it centers on David Walker. Now, David Walker was, until recently, the U.S. Comptroller General, head of the GAO. The GAO is the Government Accountability Office. Now, they are a congressional watchdog. They basically are in place to basically keep an eye on the finances of the country. Imagine that the U.S. were a business. So you've got this congressional watchdog. I mean, the funny thing is that David Walker finally had to resign in disgust because the people that he was literally the watchdog for, I mean, did not want to hear what he had to say. In fact, I give you an analogy. I mean, let's say you had a house and you had a watchdog. Now, that could be a German Shepherd. Now, this is a very highly trained dog. Basically, if there's a serious problem and you've got thieves breaking into your house, this German shepherd's going to start barking very loudly. So he starts louding, barking louder and louder. Now, are you going to investigate or simply roll over and go back to sleep? Now, that's what Congress has done here to David Walker. They've rolled over. They've gone back to sleep. They're hoping that this is just a that these issues facing our country are simply going to go away. They want to wake up the next day and be relieved that it was simply a bad dream, that, you know, it didn't happen on their watch. There's nothing to worry about. I mean, this actually kind of reminds me of a movie that I'm really fond of, Trading Places. I mean, Dan Aykroyd, basically, he wakes up from this big dream, and he sees his butler, Coleman, and he says, "I had the worst dream. I lost all my money." Then he realizes that it wasn't a dream, and it actually happened. It was reality. So Congress is still dreaming. The average American is still dreaming. They don't understand the consequences of what's going on. And David Walker, in this movie, IOUSA, he basically does a great job of delineating the problems we're facing as a country. I'm going to quote Scott Lilly, who's a fellow at the Center for American Progress. He said, "I would give Walker high marks for trying to stand up for GAO priorities, even though he had Congress and they were trying to block him and did not want to know what he was doing. The White House did not want to know what he had to say." So it's funny because this movie really resonates with average people. You look at Roger Ebert. Now, Roger Ebert is a film critic. So we actually, as an office here, every single broker in the Los Angeles office, we all went together. We've seen this movie, and Roger Ebert wrote a review on it, and it's great because a lot of the things that we were saying as brokers, the Roger Ebert echoed that. So that means that the average person should really see this, not just brokers at our firm, but everybody. And so I just wanted to put my plug in there. I'm going to take a call here. I've got Manny from D.C. Manny, you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. How are you today?
Well, basically, I had a question. One of my friends is pretty convinced that the dollar is making a rebound. He says the Fed's intervention and, you know, bad news from the Eurozone plus the recent plunge in the price of oil is going to help the market or whatever. And I'm pretty convinced this is bunk. But the numbers don't add up. And
numbers certainly don't add up. If you were to look at the recent data points out of Germany where they're pointing to slowness, or out of Japan or out of Singapore, and they're saying, well, these economies are slowing down, and that's why the U.S. dollar is rallying, that's bunk. If you look at the actual method of calculating GDP, and let's compare apples to apples, let's actually look at the facts and not look at the noise, you'll find that the U.S. Economy is contracting at a far greater clip than any of these other countries. I mean, if you have a slight negative reading out of Europe, it's nothing compared to what's happening here. Last night you had, or the night before, you had the Australian Central Bank made some comments. What did they do? They lowered rates by a quarter point to 8%. So this situation is something that they made some comments to the effect that, yeah, things are slower. On the other hand, they realize that inflation is a huge threat. They're keeping rates at 8%. The situation around the world echoes that. Now, the ECB has a mandate to control inflation to 2%. Inflation is running above that. They fully acknowledge that. They realize that they're in a box. They are not going to try to play a numbers game, which is what's happening out of the Bernanke Fed. And you see it with Secretary Paulson coming on there, touting the strong dollar policy, touting the fact that the U.S. is the most dynamic economy. Let's face it, it's $6 of debt to create $1 of GDP growth. This situation is unsustainable. It cannot continue. We're at the 100-week moving average. The dollar has a little bit of rally. Is this the first time it's happened? No. It's probably the eighth or ninth time in this bear market that the dollar has had these rallies. Every single time we've heard the same comments. Well, the dollar's going up. The bear market's over. Oh, okay, dollar's headed higher. Let's get back into U.S. assets. That's
okay.
This works. You know, it's a situation where this intervention will be unwound.
Okay. Now, my question is, what causes these temporary spikes? What causes these, you know, you said eight or nine times it's gone up. What causes these temporary spikes in the value of the dollar?
It's a cycle of fear and greed. So what happens is, as the dollar starts dropping and you have the front page of The Economist or the front page of the LA Times start talking, starting to discuss the dollar. The dollar is a falling currency. It's failing. That's when there is need of a pause. When you have too many people agreeing on something, typically the market will do the exact opposite. Now, at our firm, we never make the statement that the dollar can't go up temporarily. We don't know the road, the turn this road is going to take. But we do know where we have a very high likelihood. In my opinion, the dollar is headed much lower. If you look at what Peter's written in his book, he delineates specific targets for the dollar. The dollar index is a situation where you've got the Eurozone currency, which has done a lot of the hard work on this last move. We think the Asian currencies are going to be doing having a bigger move in the times going forward. The point I'm making is the companies that have at least a more honest accounting of what's going on, these are the countries that at least you can have some higher degree of visibility. In the U.S. economy is all smoke and mirrors. You don't know what's going on. Why are Treasury bond rates so low? There are specific data points that we look at, looking at this Caribbean hedge funds, this category which just exploded into prominence. I touched upon this briefly when I was talking to the other caller earlier. The Japanese pulled out of the market in 2005. Now, they haven't sold. They still hold over $1 trillion of our debt, but they stopped buying. And what happened? All of a sudden, this new category just rose to prominence. Why did the buying come out of the Caribbean? Well, the reason for that is because of the secrecy. You don't know what the source was for that buying out of the Caribbean. Now, we can say that somebody's buying, but that buying, it could be just the Fed monetizing the debt. I mean, they could be doing an end run. It's really something where the you look at the total figures. You look at the MZM, you look at M3, which they've stopped reporting, but we can reconstruct. You see these 15, 18, 20% growth rates, which is pure inflation at its best. You see that feeding into prices. This is all bearish for the dollar in the long term. Now, does the dollar have to go down every day? No. It can even go up. I think I made a point earlier that it could go up through the election. So it's a situation where we don't know from day to day or from week to week what's going to happen. Looking at the charts, my feeling is that this the weekly dollar index is severely overbought. We're probably going to get repelled at the 100-day. We're probably going to turn back lower. Now, is that set in stone? Of course not. There's all kinds of things that can happen. Our feeling is whatever happens in the short term does not, for one iota, invalidate what Peter's been saying. I mean, his message actually rings true more today than any time in the previous 8 years. In fact, I would say that this is an opportunity. It's a gift. It's something that's being handed to us to take part in this insurance policy by getting some assets into conservative companies, dividend-paying companies outside of the U.S., and letting that insurance policy pay you. I mean, basically, you just collect the dividends that are denominated in these sounder currencies. I mean, all currencies are going to go down versus hard assets. I mean, of that we have no doubt. But
absolutely.
They're going to go down at different rates. We think that the fundamentals of the U.S. economy are such that the dollar will fall faster versus hard assets than these other currencies.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
I have Adam from Toronto. How are you, Adam?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
I have a question about shorting gold. I know companies like Barrick, like the largest gold miners, are short something like 9.5 million ounces of gold. I was just wondering what role mining companies and central banks play in all this. And
it's a very interesting case because they actually made a big a press release about how they covered their short position. And of course, one of the facts that you've uncovered, which is probably, I think, on page 185 or something on their annual report, was that the Pascua-Lima project in Peru, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they have a project hedge. Now, that project hedge is 9.5 million ounces, so your figures are correct there. Now, it's funny because that's underwater by about $6 billion, which is far in excess of the income that they've made over the last few years with these high gold prices. So My feeling is that they will resolve that dispute that they're having with, I believe there's a claim on the property that from the local person that they bought it from, and that's in the courts. So that will probably be resolved, but that's just a guess. I mean, I don't own any bear personally, but it is one of the larger cap miners out there, and they do have the ability to withstand this. I tend to favor non-hedged miners, not only the large North American miners, which do not have any hedges, but a lot of the foreign miners out there. We're buying a lot of stocks out of Hong Kong and Australia, which are unhedged. Yes, that's going to be more volatile, but if you're taking a small portion of your portfolio, now what we define as small is different from what other your traditional thinkers would. I mean, I get clients who transfer in their accounts to me every day, and they're saying, our broker says we shouldn't have more than 2% of our assets in gold. I think that's preposterous. It should be maybe a multiple of that. What that multiple is really depends on the person. It depends if you have any other physical gold already, or if you have any gold stocks, or if you have any other type of assets that are similar to that. So that is my take on hedging. Philosophically, I am opposed to it. Especially with gold and silver. I mean, there are certain industries, maybe natural gas, for example, where you can delineate that the market really will move violently due to extraneous events. And so in those type of markets, it might be appropriate. Hurricane Katrina would be a perfect example. When you saw natural gas spike to $15, some of the companies that were invested in hedged into that. They sold into that rally. And which, you know, it kind of made sense. I mean, if their cost of natural gas is $5 and they can sell at $15 and they're paying a monthly dividend, they want to make sure that dividend is secure. And so in that regard, I would think it's not the worst thing in the world. But as far as gold and silver, which I consider money, it's a different story altogether.
Okay, so as a Barrick, like, shareholder, you wouldn't be overly concerned, but...
No, it's hard for me to really say. I'm not a Barrick shareholder, so my perspective is a little bit different. I mean, as an independent person, if I had to make a choice buying an unhedged or a hedged company, I would go with the unhedged.
Because I've heard the argument made that, you know, they sell short 9.5 million ounces to open up a mine that'll produce them 50 million ounces. So, you know, they might have sort of that thing going, and maybe that they have sort of, you know, a sweet deal with the central banks that have sort of good lending?
I believe the name of the mine is Pascua-Lama. Try Googling it and doing some research on it, because I think you'll find that there's more to meet the eye there with that hedge book. It's a very interesting story. By no means am I an expert on Barrick, but I think you should do that. We are running out of time here. I've got to take one more call. It's been really great talking to you. Matthew from MS, are you there?
Yes, how are you doing?
Very good. We only have a minute and a half, so I have to keep it quick. What can I do for you today?
Yeah, I was hoping you could maybe comment on the coupling versus decoupling of America with China. Do you think?
Excellent question. My feeling is that the Chinese market, we're seeing this day after day after day. Companies that were exporting to the U.S. are finding that because the renminbi has been appreciating, they have been unable to keep pace with this currency gain. So what they've done is they've retooled. They are selling into their own domestic market. They're selling to Europe. They're selling to other places. And I wish I had more time to really give you an in-depth response, but we've got about a minute left. What I will say is that the Chinese basically are going to be able to release the burden, that tremendous burden on Chinese peasants, on Chinese middle class, of having to support the U.S. consumer. So as they get to release themselves of that burden, the average Chinese person is going to be way better. And the feeling I have is that it's something that's inevitable. So look at what Peter Schiff says, look what Jim Rogers says, and these guys who really get it. So I got to close out the show. It's been a pretty good discussion with the various callers. Thanks for calling in. Next week you'll get to hear a familiar voice. Peter Schiff will be back on the air with you. And you can give him a call if you have any questions about with the brokers. There are several lines open. You can call the Los Angeles or the Newport Beach office, or you can try Scottsdale. And thanks for listening in. Have a good day.